KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM. Hey everybody, so for this program of Finding Me, I'm going to be going over some questions that people have, or some of the misinformation and myths that are going around about the Free Voltron Season 8 campaign. So I'm going to answer some of those questions, or at least some of the things that I've heard. If you have any more questions or concerns, or you're hearing about rumors and you want to know if they're true, I will answer those questions as honestly as possible and provide receipts. If I don't know the answer, I'll be honest with you. I will tell you I don't know, but I will probably direct you to someone or find someone on the record to tell you what the honest truth is. So, I'm going to go over 6 different questions. 1. This petition is about shipping, or you're mad that your ship isn't canon. So, to answer that question, did you read the petition? Because I don't think you did. And if you did, you would know that is not about shipping. In fact, the statement reads as follows. This petition was started by Allison Bugenis, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce your last name, Allison. On December 14th, 2018, DreamWorks and Netflix released the final season of Voltron Legendary Defender. Rather than receiving the original vision of the showrunners and cast, we as the faithful audience were given a messy season full of executive meddling. Beloved characters were mischaracterized, fridged, and left in the background to be forgotten. The bond between the cast disappeared. The last-minute addition of the pre-credits epilogue brought us a crushing end to an already disappointing season. Instead of giving ends that our beloved cast deserved, executive meddling caused them to be separated and tokenized and completely out of character. We are aware that this was not the original plan that the showrunners had for Season 8, and we deserve, as an audience who truly love the show and characters, to know that their vision and story was without the executive meddling that ruined the final season. And so, I can understand if you saw some of the signatures, but those are people who often get confused and didn't actually read the petition and didn't actually ask any questions and just jumped into it. But, you know, a signature is a signature, or at least that's how I see it. So, at the very least, let me tell you and read to you the update since then. It is amazing how much support this petition has received in less than 24 hours, and cannot thank everyone enough for coming together like this. Every signature is another voice added to the chorus, all demanding DreamWorks to rectify this mistake and to honor the vision of LM and JDS. We must keep this momentum going. Keep shouting at DreamWorks, tell them what they did was unacceptable, and demand they respect the showrunners and their audience. Continue to share this post so that it spreads further. Share to Twitter, Tumblr, to Pillowfort, Facebook, etc. Only by being loud and standing firmly together will we get DreamWorks' attention. Thank you all so much. And then, in another post, close to 14,000. Again, thank you all so much for signing and sharing and promoting. Hopefully, with our combined voices, DreamWorks will be forced to listen. I know the silence from them has not been very comforting, but please, do not discourage. And please keep fighting and shouting. Also, I want to emphasize, again, that this petition was also started to support all the creative staff against the executives at DreamWorks. Executives forced the hands of our writers and showrunners, and this poorly thought out and edited season was the inevitable result. We want to know what the original plan, vision, was for the final season, and we want to tell executives that we are not okay with them throwing their creative teams under the bus the way they have here. Keep on sharing #FreeVLDS8 on Twitter, Instagram, etc. Thank you all so much and keep on shouting. And in an edited post, please refrain from putting comments that point to anger towards not getting certain ships. Example, phrases like kick are very off message. This petition is not about shipping. It is about executive meddling in the creative process, which was mentioned in the first and second update. So, again, I will read to you another update. Do not lose sight of the original message. The fact that we are so close to 15,000 is astounding. Please do not give up and please keep on sharing. However, I do feel it necessary to reiterate the original message and point of this petition due to some commentary I have seen. First and foremost, this is not about shipping. This petition was not created because of X ship did not happen or Y ship did happen. And so comments expressing those sorts of sentiments are completely off message and detrimental. We do not want those people who need to see this to dismiss us as a group, or of angry fans who did not get the endgame romances we may have wanted. Please refrain from posting comments like that. Secondly, this petition was created in support of the creative team against the executives who meddled in their creative process. It is not about getting a perfect season, because such a thing does not exist, or even necessarily rewrite. It's about getting the story that our creative team originally wanted before executives forced them into certain decisions. Just based on the sideshow's epilogue last May edition, we know for a fact that the season was meddled with. There is other evidence pointing to the theory that plenty of other scenes were altered in some way. We are asking for the story that would have happened if things like that did not force our creative writing team's hand. We want to know what season our writers and showrunners would have given us had they been allowed the full creativity they deserved. This petition is meant to support them and show that we know that they have had difficulties with this sort of issue and to try and force the executives to honor their original vision. That we are not okay with executive changing things to please certain groups or for PR stunts, and then effectively throwing their creative teams under the bus when fans are displeased with the final season. Thirdly, this petition, in being supportive of the entire staff of the show, is not meant for anyone who has or support people who have harassed, threatened, or sent any hate towards the writers and voice actors. This does not include legitimate criticism, but is aimed at the type of people who sent death threats to voice actors, doxed other fans, and threatened to physically harm Lauren Montgomery or Joaquin Dos Santos. This petition does not come from hate towards the staff. It comes from disappointment and anger towards executives who meddled in their story. I apologize for the lengthy message, but I wanted to reiterate, make these things clear so that we do not lose sight that we are of what we are asking for and who we are supporting in this petition. Thank you, and let's get to 15,000. Edit. Just a note, since people have been asking, the goal keeps increasing because change.org ups it whenever a milestone is hit. I do not control the goals myself. And then, which I also put it on the Finding Me page, a master post of animation anomalies. I've been given permission to share this post, which has now been restored, by the way, as of a few days ago. It's a post with a compilation of many of the noticeable errors and anomalies in Season 8's animation that fans have been bringing to light, though is not necessarily an exhaustive list. If all of these are results of last-minute editing, I will reiterate what the post had said, form your own conclusion, then it continues to support the idea that executives meddled not just with the inclusion of slideshow epilogue, but with the entire season as a whole, that we did not get the vision of the showrunners, but what the executives thought was acceptable. Again, I know the silence is upsetting, but we have come together to show that we are not okay with the creative team being pushed under the bus at the whims of executives. Control over the story should be in their hands, and I thank everyone who has continued to support that notion. 20,000 and further clarifications. We have surpassed 20,000 signatures, and that is absolutely amazing. I want to once again thank everyone who has signed and shared and promoted. Since this petition has become so widespread, I wanted to clarify a few things once again, just to make sure everyone is on the same page. First, the ultimate goal of the petition is to try and pressure DreamWorks into releasing the original version of Season 8. Whether that is in the form of undoctored scenes, or in the form of a script, we want to know the story that the creative team originally wanted to give us free from executive influence. The official stance of this petition does not make assumptions about what original story really was. We know that the slideshow epilogue was added, and we have seen plenty of evidence about scenes being altered, but I do not, and I encourage everyone to not inject into this petition conclusions as to how the story was going to play out exactly. I ask this simply because all of our assumptions will be based in certain ways, based on who our favorite characters are, what our favorite ships are, and what sorts of plot lines we enjoy the best. We all take the same evidence and push it in different directions. Saying this is what season 8 was meant to be is not the goal here. Asking what season 8 was meant to be, on the other hand, is. Once we start making assumptions and interpretations, which none of us truly do objectively, we divide ourselves and lose sight of the original message. I include myself in this. I know I have a bias on how I believe the story would have played out. Therefore, I also know my interpretations can be wrong. I know that what I may have wanted will be different from others. We are all going to have that bias. It is not judgment, and it is not bad to admit. But because of that bias, we need to step back and find the commonality that we did not receive the season that the staff originally wanted to release, and that we want to know what version, whatever it may be. We want the story that our showrunners and our writers would have given to us if they were allowed the full creativity they deserved. I will also reiterate again that this petition is meant to support the entire creative staff of Voltron. This includes the showrunners, the writers, the animation team, the voice actors, etc. Our grievances are with DreamWorks and its executives. Executives altered the season and then stepped aside in an effort to push the blame and the disappointment, anger, of the fans onto the staff. This is unacceptable, and the focus of this petition remains on them. I ask everyone to keep things in mind while sharing or discussing this. In just a week, we have gathered over 20,000 signatures, and I keep seeing the number rise, which is incredible. Keep it up. We will continue to tell DreamWorks, and even other companies, that we are not going to quietly accept their meddling in the creative process. That we want the original visions of our writers who actually care about giving us a story they love. Edit. Letters to the Voltron campaign. Happy holidays, everyone. We have come so far, and hopefully we'll have an even more when executives get back to their offices on January 2nd. We've passed a huge milestone. This petition has more signatures than How I Met Your Mother petition, requesting a new ending to that series, which they received. This is huge news and extremely exciting, especially since Voltron has smaller general audience than How I Met Your Mother. There have been a few people who have been generous enough to translate this petition into several languages, including Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, French, Chinese, and German. The last two also include the master post of Anomalies. Since then, I have posted some of those translations to the Finding Me page on KPPPFM. So, once again, I will make sure to attach that to the blog post, or you can take a look at the January 2nd blog post to see where all that information is at, and I will continue to update those posts, including future posts. So, people have also begun a mass mail-in campaign to DreamWorks to try and further to get their attention. This campaign encourages people to mail a polite and professional letter expressing their concerns, disappointments, and wishes. These letters can be mailed to DreamWorks Animation, LLC, 1000 Flower Street, Glendale, California, 91201. The previous version of this update included the full Socks for Voltron campaign, but after hearing some legitimate concerns, I am working behind the scenes to address the sock mail-in. I will still strongly support and encourage the letter campaign, however. As usual, I encourage everyone who writes to keep shipping comments out of the formal letters, and I continue to implore people to stop discussing shipping in the petition discussion. And there's a bunch of updates like that, but have you not noticed that every single time it's addressed, or for most of the time it's addressed, it's not about shipping? Please read the updates. Jesus. So, anyway, and even if it was, we do not need any given ship to be canon, to understand that there are many plot holes, and I'm going to put it out there. Yes, I'm a Shiro and Keith shipper, or Sheath shipper, and getting a better ending means that it won't be canon, then hell, I'll take it. But don't take away their friendship, because it still comes off as homophobic. There are plenty of stories out there that could be two gay men who just happen to be in the same room, but they don't have to be together romantically. Gay people can exist just as much as straight people can without screwing each other. Also, even if there is a gay man and a straight man, they can still be friends. I have a few straight friends myself that exist, and along with that, you know, it just comes off as really weird when a friendship falls apart like that, when they were ride and dry bros for each other. I mean, come on. If they're not bros, what are they now? Because they're not acting like bros anymore. So, along with that, another point, and this is unrelated to the petition, but these are level-headed people who have enjoyed Voltron and all previous incarnations to some degree. So I want to play the official Let's Voltron podcast piece that talks about their critiques of the Voltron Season 8 season, including the epilogue. So let's go to that.
I did notice that Curtis had amazing teleportation powers in this episode. And I understand that some other viewers have noticed that as well. But
You mean how he was with them at the shooting gallery and then all of a sudden he was at the arm wrestling?
Yes, yes. Maybe Curtis has a twin.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, there's a little bit of a brouhaha about this particular topic. And maybe we'll get into that a little later.
Then that night, the Lions of Voltron basically leave and the Paladins watch them go.
And then an epilogue happens.
Okay. Let's talk about epilogues. Can I just get on that?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about epilogues for a little bit here.
Go for it.
I've never been a fan of them.
Okay.
They kind of put a stamp on the future of a set of characters that says, this is what happened to them and it can't be changed. I like it better when we're able to make up our own minds of where they all ended up and what types of future adventures they might have.
Yeah, I could see that.
There's other movies that have had it. Animal House had an epilogue at the end.
Right.
Harry Potter had epilogues at the end. A bunch of films have done it. And I really don't think any of them had people saying, yeah, I agree 100%. That's what would have happened to them.
Yeah. Of course, in comedies, it may not matter as much, like in the case of Animal House, but yeah, certainly in a more character focused dramatic series, yeah, it can rub some people the wrong way. It can rub some people the really wrong way.
Yeah, I was thinking that they really could have just done better with taking that post credits scene that we saw, which a lot of people didn't see.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, so if they would have just had the Lions leaving the Paladins and the Paladins saying goodbye to the Lions, and then the Lions showing up in space looking at what looks like a silhouette of Allura. Mm-hmm. I think it would have ended better, and then we would have, you know, had a chance to have make up our own minds about what they would have done after that.
Yeah.
And then Shiro retired from fighting and gets married to Curtis, the Atlas crew member.
Yes, and there are many different reactions to this particular moment.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of reactions. Lots of them.
Yeah. To our listeners, we are very aware that some of you are in no way fans of this particular shot for various reasons. I don't think we need to cover them in detail here. I'm certain we will get more in depth with this when we cover this episode properly in a specific review. But yes, we definitely understand and empathize. It is certainly not a universally loved shot.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, about the epilogue, and yes, the Shiro scene is controversial among many of the viewers, and we totally acknowledge and respect that. If we look beyond the Shiro shot, most of the rest of it either is bloody obvious or redundant with the last episode, the main story, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yes, we see Lance, you know, spreading Allura's word to the children on Altea, to that class of people of children from various planets. He even says he lives a simpler life on his home world. So the Lance epilogue shot is completely redundant. We know that Keith didn't accept an offer to lead the Galra or represent them in the Coalition. We didn't know that he was going to do something with the Blades, but it didn't need to be stated. Hunk, we saw him with the early stages of the Culinary Empire, where he's, you know, helping to wage peace between the two warring factions on the Atlas with his meal. So that was completely redundant. I guess Kolovan and Kurolia being representatives to the Gauron representatives to the coalition is new, but
that's not a big stretch, though.
No, it's really not. And then Pidge, we saw her at the end of the episode working with her brother on the vehicle team and the chip robot and all that. That was redundant. And then, of course, Shiro, which was not redundant, but was provocative.
Well, you know, we had heard that if any kind of relationships were going to develop, it was going to happen naturally and stuff like that. And obviously, this didn't really happen naturally. I mean, we weren't there to see what had happened in the year since, obviously. So we didn't know what had happened. But we would have liked to have seen if there was a relationship that was going to develop from one of the members of the Atlas crew that, you know, maybe they could have shown that along the way or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was also speculation that it wasn't supposed to be Curtis originally. It was supposed to be somebody else.
Yes. We've heard a lot of what people have said online, and we don't have any additional information at this time.
Right. I wouldn't want to put any information out there that was speculation because I'd want to hear it from the actual people who made the show.
So what I really liked about the Let's Voltron official podcast is that they brought up some of the things that plenty of other fans, shippers and non-shippers alike, already talked about, like the character Curtis and how he just magically teleported places when he should not have that ability. And on top of that, the epilogues, like, you know, even, like, arguably, there are some epilogues that exist in books or movies or series that are okay. But most of the time, it's really not okay because you want your audience to have a little bit of freedom to imagine what their favorite characters might do or won't do. But if you, like, you know, stick it in hard, well, then maybe it's not going to, like, hit the audience you want unless you just happen to know your audience really well. So, and along with that, and what I appreciate about the Let's Voltron official podcast people is that they totally understand where a lot of us other fans are coming from for various reasons. And so I appreciate that those people are hearing us and we hear you. And so we are both valid in this because obviously, I mean, look at the percentage. 8%, or at least at the time of this recording. Who knows if it will drop another percent? And that's just sad when you're doing worse than, well, the Avatar movie. Ugh. I haven't even seen it. As far as I know, it doesn't exist. Neither does Voltron Season 8. And if you don't believe just regular fans who are straight white men TM, I want you to consider Sean Z's article. I've already shared it on my previous blog post, and I will share it again if you like, if you still haven't read it. But I also wanted to share this very general post that is not necessarily about Voltron, but it's about queer representation and how people handle it. So, Sean Z writes on Twitter here, "I recently heard a group of straight media critics discuss queer representation. They did not invite a queer guest on their program, nor did they attempt to engage queer critics who had spoken on the same topic. The critics simply expressed their opinions and used their large platform to talk over thousands of hurt and frustrated queer voices. As someone who is gay and writing on diversity in media, I'll let you all in on a little secret. I live in constant fear. Fear that a straight reviewer with more followers than me will simply say, 'You're just a whining gay,' and strip me of the small voice I have. All it takes is one careless person with power to destroy all the nuanced and detailed work of so many smaller critics. To be clear, non-queer people are welcome to have opinions on queer representation in media. I'm in favor of getting more voices on this important topic. I don't have a problem with a straight person having a different position than I do. I'm not automatically right because I'm holding a magical gay card, but if a straight person is going to discuss queer representation, then it is their responsibility to listen to queer voices first. If a straight person tells me, 'I spoke with several gay individuals and they had alternate feelings on an issue,' that's completely fine. I welcome other perspectives. But if a straight person substitutes their opinion of what is good for queer individuals without listening to the voices of actual gay people, that demonstrates a profound lack of care for an important topic. That is especially true for people with large follower counts. Their words are far more powerful than mine, even though they can be completely ignorant of the issues they're discussing. To every other media critic, and anyone else with a large platform, if you're going to talk about queer issues, please speak to queer people first. Invite them onto your show. Read articles by queer people. Do at least a cursory Google search on your topic. Above all else, listen to gay people. Let them speak and help them tell their story. And if you can't do that, if you don't feel like you can put in the effort to talk about a sensitive issue with respect and tact, that's fine too. But then you need to stop talking. I completely agree with that. I also think personally that when straight people talk about queer people in their lives and they use them as a token to bolster their opinion, which happens to fit, then I don't really know if the queer people in their lives are actually their friends and they're just using them as a token to bolster their opinion. So that's my two cents on that. But Shanzi's thoughts is perfectly valid, especially just simply the thought of, hey, listen to queer people first, let them have a moment, you know, let them take the floor. Okay, so next, question number two. You're doing this for a secret ending that does not exist. Whew, wow, that's a claim. Because there is no claim that there's a secret ending. We are only definitively stating in the free VLD essay movement that the ending was different based on tweets by staff and interns at DreamWorks who saw the show Bible and drafts as it got built and how terrible it was when they stopped speaking out about it. And I'll get to that later. And Studio Mirror animators talked about noting that this season wasn't as good as the previous seasons and imply or confirm that the epilogue was never there. So I have a tweet thread that was translated for me by a person who speaks Korean and reads Korean and everything. So this thread is by Taekwon Sonen, an animator at Studio Mirror that worked on Voltron. And this is what he had to say about the season. After talking with a fan who honestly liked the show to the end, I thought about whether the Voltron Legendary Defender was really that terrible enough to be spat on with a cool head. I'm an animator. Not every animator likes what they're working on. Some don't even recognize what they've been working on. If an animation is like a house, then an animator is the one who does bricklaying. You can be proud of having made this house, but this house belongs to the designer. Still, as a bricklayer who built a house called Voltron, I am so proud and thankful of the series. And maybe if I hadn't known anyone who cried and laughed along with the series, I wouldn't be. But I've met people who thank me personally for laying the bricks, so I love this house, even though it isn't mine. So if you ask me, if this house's finishing touch is feeble, weird, and the worst thing that ever happened, especially compared to the magnificent, beautiful start, then yes, I agree completely. But that finishing touch is not a little thing. To me, every single brick of the last season is very upsetting. Everything else is good. No, everything else is wonderfully compatible and done very well. But one small brick has such a different color with everything else, it's disrupting the whole thing. It's pulling out every little error, even the ones I hadn't noticed before, out in the open. Once again, this is only my opinion. To be honest, if I start rewatching the series from season 1 and pick out little bits I don't like, of course there will be. It's only that they were so well made and even the errors look compatible. Actually, I enjoyed watching season 8 to the end. Everyone tried their best and I sent lots of love and thank yous to the creators. I want to make something like that. I wanted to make something like this, not only as a bricklayer, but as a designer too. I love this series so much. The last brick shocked me so much, but still, at that point, I was like, that's disappointing, but without it, it's okay. They should have left it with an open ending. Then I started talking with other fans, the people who loved and adored Voltron, the ones who had high expectations of it. And I started agreeing with them. Yes, they are right, and I still think they are right. Passionate fans didn't say anything that isn't true. But on the other hand, is it okay to spit so much like this on the designer who didn't know this last piece was going to fit so wrongly with the whole series? Maybe. You do you. I felt like that was really important to read because, you know, it really, like, laid out the facts with the fact that there was no epilogue and they should have left it open-ended, which was the intent of the animators, at least, and of possibly the show runners. But something changed, obviously. A hand was forced. So, also, I wanted to play this video clip from the end of the season. If you haven't watched it, don't look at it. But for those who have and have seen the season and have felt upset by it, I want you to see what happens when you remove the epilogue entirely, okay? When you remove the epilogue while changing nothing else in the season, as garbage as it may be, it evokes a different sense of emotion to imply hope, and rather than the hopelessness of seeing the cast take a selfie at their friend's memorial with the confusing end shot of the lions flying into space and has only... You have to look closely to see the nebulas that form the shape of Princess Allura. But without that epilogue, it looks a little bit like this. Now, how does that feel to you, right? It feels a lot better, and it doesn't, like, technically fix anything, maybe, for you, and that's okay, you can feel that way, but for me, when I saw this edit by a fan, I felt so much better. It was a little bit healing, actually. So, also, if you are saying that we're saying that there's a secret Shiro and Keith ending, or Keith and Lance ending, or whatever ship you think it is, I can agree that there is no secret Shiro and Keith ending, or Keith and Lance ending, or anything. But that's presumptuous on your part. I am willing to get a different ending, if it means it's never canon, because I never expected it to be. Because I've been watching anime and cartoons all my life. I've had, quote-unquote, cishet ships. I've had gay ships lately, because that's the part of my identity that I'm exploring now. And could have it been ambiguous? Sure. In fact, I was expecting it to be because that's what it looked like where it was going. And I'm not as naive to believe that we would have ever, like, gotten a wedding or a explicit, like, hey, you want to go out with me or whatever sort of thing? No. In fact, I was expecting that they at least be friends, or at least everyone stayed single for the most part and moved on with their lives, however that may have been. And, you know, because it was supposed to be ambiguous and open-ended and, like, everyone was happy and alive, didn't happen like that, but I could have, that's what I was dreaming. So next on this list of questions, you're just upset that you didn't get the ending you wanted. Okay, well, once again, presumptuous, why don't you try defining the ending that you think we wanted for us, because I've already addressed the previous stuff. It still does not explain the plot holes or the overuse of dismissive "it's magic" wave away to explain any and everything about the season, or the reversion in character growth and behaviors. Just a few examples, I'm not going to list them all. Anyone who was watching season 7 knows that between season 5, 6, and 7, Keith met his mother, And he went from referring to her simply as Crolia, which is her name, to saying, to having a growth with her where he was able to say, I love you, Mom, and give her an embrace. And, like, I cried because I have a history with my mother where, you know, she's had to make some sacrifices in order to protect me because she loves me. And I understand what that's like. I've cried about it, and hopefully I don't cry again. But I feel like that's a really powerful thing for boys who identify with Keith, or even girls, or trans men. I know there's a lot of people who identify with Keith's character, and I think that's an important message to have in media, where you're not too feminine or anything, or soft, to tell, to have a man tell his mother that he loves her. And, you know, I think that's important. But for him to refer to her as Crolia in season 8, not only does it feel disrespectful to his character, but it just feels really weird and makes it really sad that somehow that was lost. Like, did the writers not see the previous 7 seasons of growth? No? All right. And here's another point that I have. And again, it's Keith focused because, you know, that's who I know the most. And also the fact that, you know, if you watch season 7, and we can agree to disagree or whatever you want about how that went down, during the Space Madness episode, there was a lot of things that fans were sitting on in terms of the Paladin's growth and relationship with Keith, like how they dealt with him and, you know, as an outsider, and how they tended to ostracize him for his behavior and everything else. So, like, that episode was a growth on their part to understand Keith better, especially because he had grown to be their leader now and they have to work together. But it was so cathartic for me to watch them work together for the first time and understand Keith better that, you know, I could forgive that it wasn't done perfectly, but it was enough for me to understand that the Paladins are stronger together and they were truly going to be a team rather than being allies for the sake of forming Voltron. Because it's one thing where it's like, okay, you have to work together to form Voltron. But instead, they had grown to a point where it was completely seamless and they could just do it. So, thirdly, and surprise, surprise, I'm not going to talk about Shiro, but, you know, I've already talked about that twice over. This is about Lance and Alora. But, like, Lance was reaching a very mature place where he unconditionally loved Alora. Not because he hoped that she would love him back, but because she was valued as a friend. And I think that's really important for men who are a little bit like Lance in some way, who flirt with people that they like, and even though they are rejected, I thought it was amazing that even though Alora went through what she did with Lotor, that he supported her no matter what. He didn't go, I told you so, or, hey, now that Lotor's gone, maybe you should wink wink, right? So, but that didn't happen. In fact, he was just supportive of her the whole way. And there was some hints in season 7 that Alora, over the course of several months in space as they left Lotor's battle to head back to Earth, that they might get together at the end. But then something strange happened with the way Alora decided to accept Lance's proposal to be together as a girlfriend-boyfriend couple and everything. And it felt like she was there not for herself, but just to, like, I guess, please Lance in some way, but not exactly for her happiness. And it was framed in such a way like she didn't want to be alone. And I don't think that's the right message to send to women of color, or to women, or to people of color at all, where you're just in a relationship because you don't want to be alone. And for the past 7 seasons, I didn't think Alora was alone because she had talked about how, for example, Keith was, you know, someone who she came to think of as family despite his Galra heritage. Or the fact that even though she's one of the few last Altaians, she had, you know, known Karan most of her life and who has also a history, an intimate history with her father as his advisor and best friend, and is one of the other Altaians with them, and she was getting to know Romel. So I was thinking to myself, well, maybe she's a lot less alone, and with the fact that the paladins are now her family, then why would you say that you're alone when you have your best friend Lance, who is now, you know, completely supportive of you no matter what, and you've got the other paladins who've got your back and wouldn't let you do anything alone? Like, what happened to that? That's totally unfair. So, and that's just a few points. Question number four, or myth information. Ooh, that's a good one. This is what the writers, showrunners actually wanted? I don't believe it. I can't believe it, because, why? Okay, so I want you guys to find an interview where they definitely wanted this, and look at the results of seasons 1 through 7, which at least have some cohesive plot line that makes some sense, despite the shaky and decent season 7 that divides on opinion, but is still passably done well. And also, they've been radio silent, so we cannot definitively say what they wanted in either direction. Pattern of behavior indicates that this is extremely forced in a way that doesn't fit the more curated style that we've known for the past 7 seasons, until we can reasonably believe that they are no longer under NDA, or they're not burning bridges for the sake of the industry or whatever, then I can't believe a word they say either way. So, unless I know that, we're not going to be able to tell. So, that is unconfirmed on that. I don't know what they wanted, but this is uncharacteristic for them. Alright. Myth information point number 5. There was no editing this season. Doubt that. I've got receipts for that, buddy. So, this is a little bit contentious, but I've got some receipts nonetheless. So, Barley draws on Twitter, opened her mouth, and revealed that Ezor was dead, and many thought she was because of this, and now she seems to have been heavily pasted in. Check that out in the Master Post of Anomalies list. There is one instance of editing. If there's one instance of editing, then there has to be more, especially if you want to make sure that the plot works out for both that part of the plot where she is alive, as well as the parts that affect the relationships of other people. I had people talking to me on my fan Twitter saying, even if she was dead, it wouldn't have changed anything. Disagree, and I'll tell you why. So Zethrid is close to Ezor, and anyone who knows Zethrid knows that she loves punching things. Loves violence, loves destroying everything. She's a fun gal. A little bit rowdy. Ezor, on the other hand, she's a different kind of fun for an evil villain. She likes to torture people. So when Lotor was gone, they got together to become basically space warlords, pirates of sorts. And they were even threatening to torture the Paladin Pidge, who is the youngest of the Paladin group. So, but the reason that they did this was because they were living in fear of Lotor, who was missing, and they had no idea if he was technically dead or alive or anything. So, on that note, there's something that's interesting about Ezor and Zethrid that you can pick up. Despite their love of violence, Ezor, obviously, who is in fear of Lotor, definitely has this instinct for survival. And even when Lotor went off the deep end or whatever, she was one of the generals that closed off communications with him in order to talk with Aksha about, hey, should we bail, because this is kind of crazy and I don't want to deal with this and I'd like to stay alive. And you know what, fair girl, I would have escaped too if I were in her place. So why, when the IGF Atlas is being attacked, would she say no to escaping? That's just really weird. Ezor, where are you, girl? Why aren't you like yourself? Oh, it's because she's dead, alright? So, on that, there's one thing. So, she's out of character. Secondly, there's a bit of a suggestion, in fact, many were predicting this, that there was supposed to be part of the season where Shira was supposed to return Keith's gratitude in some way for saving him so many times. And yeah, sure, Shiro did save Keith back when he was a kid and brought him up to be one of the best pilots of his generation, but people wanted to see in some way where Shiro saved Keith's life now. And we all believe, at least, and of course we have zero confirmation, aside from possible edits and also the fact that Netflix's Aya description gives away a lot. All the secrets are there, including the translations. You better check that out on the free Voltron SA Twitter. So what that reveals is that Zethred, for some reason, was pointing her gun at Shiro. After that, the conversation turns a little bit weird. But it heavily or explicitly states that Izor is dead. And if you're going to contrast that with Shiro and Keith's friendship, whatever that may be, platonic or romantic, I don't care, brotherly, it wasn't like that anymore. And for some reason, Shiro was just unresponsive. And heck, he didn't even pick up it was his best friend that was in trouble right away. It was Veronica and Aksha, so that was weird. But that's besides the point. If you think about Zethred's motivations for targeting Keith, isolating him, and then threatening to kill him in front of Shiro, while also pointing a gun at Shiro, then you have to understand why Zethred was so hurt about Izor's death. And you also have to think about how hurt Keith was about Shiro's death at the time, and refused to believe that he was dead, although Zethred knows that for a fact that Izor is dead, at least. And you also have to think about why would you compare and contrast those two? And if you know that Izor is a catalyst slash enabler of Zethred's behavior, it makes me question her motivations to help the IGF Atlas when it's being attacked. If she already has Izor there alive with her, and she busts out of the prisoner's chambers or whatever, why wouldn't she escape with Izor, who usually enables both her violent tendencies as well as, her survival instinct to get out when things get a little bit rough? It doesn't make any sense. So not only do you have the contextual change between Shiro and Keith's friendship, but also you have the fact that Zethred has different motivations now. And now, not only does her redemption seem empty, but untrustworthy. Okay? So, if you want more details on that, I probably have my document somewhere where I talked about this on Twitter, on my fan Twitter. But I'll probably post it in the blog post so that maybe you can get an idea of what I was talking about. So, and let's see. Here is my last point. Let's see, how far along are we in this program? 45 minutes in? Lovely. So, the last point. Okay, what if the original story was actually worse than what we received? Well, buddy, let me tell you something. Because, actually, that is untrue. What about the Keith and Aksha thing? Like, okay, first off, yeah, it looked like there was going to be a thing, but the thing was, I thought it was just being teased, kind of like the whole Keith and Allura thing was teased. Even Lauren Montgomery, like, you know, if you listen to the Forum podcast on the Arc of Tal'Azhir episode and her thoughts on that, she was hoping and planning to forge a new path for the future of their program, their show. So, like, that was already, like, off the table at that time, for the most part. Along with the whole Shiro dying thing. Like, okay, from, you know, with all the interviews that I remember, I definitely remember a part where if Shiro was going to die, things would have turned out differently, and Keith would have stepped up as leader, but one of the few good things that the executives managed to do was that they kept Shiro alive, and by keeping Shiro alive, we have his current fate at the Atlas. But with that, when there was other ideas along the way that we learned, like possibly along the same timeline where Shiro dies, Keith meets Lotor, and both of them being Hafgalra, they would have bonded in some way, and that's how Keith would have become more familiar with Aksha, and maybe then it was going to be a thing. But because it was off the table now, that didn't happen. So, just because something was going to happen before doesn't mean it was going to happen later, or that was their full intention, or they ran out of ideas. No. This looks like the work of a lot of other writers that were working with Laura Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos with their ideas, and things just, you know, they fought the entire way for 7 seasons, and if season 7 was being made the same time season 8 was, I'm pretty sure they were fighting then too. Give them a little bit of credit. Along with that, as far as like how bad season 8 could have been, I would say it was actually probably a lot worse. So this is a little bit better, but it could still have been better if it had been at least cohesive. So I'm going to pull up my receipts once again. So once again, Barley opened her mouth on, well, a lot of things, and she has a tendency of doing that where she just tells us all the secrets when she shouldn't. I am surprised that she never got fired and she just managed to leave peacefully, whatever. But she mentioned that that's a thing. Ultimately, the story is incomplete and I don't know what the final result is. But all I can say is, much like the rest of the story, they didn't get to do everything the way they planned. They did what they could to patch it up. So, I already know for a fact that it had to be patched up some way. It's because they had to move some things around. And she said that on August 10th. So, and as far as we know and we can tell based on interviews and all that, season 7 was being made around the same time as season 8 was. And it's already crazy enough as it is that Voltron as a fandom got 8 seasons in 2 years. Most of the time, even for kids shows, you only get seasons like maybe once a year. So I was thinking that this would last a while, but no, this went real fast. Okay, and next, I have this other post by Aria, who had this blog post talking about part of their internship work. So they had a couple of asks saying the following. I've loved Voltron for a while, but I feel like the writing in season 8 was off. Allura definitely deserved better. Same with Lance. I feel like some plot points could have been done a lot better than it was, but I still love all the characters in this show, especially Keith. And watching them learn and grow throughout this show has been cool. I just wish some of the story could have been gone differently. And then another Tumblr user asked, I know you're probably getting flooded with asks, but which season did you feel was the most well-rounded, best written? Time, I can typically find something to enjoy about all the seasons, but for season 8, the only thing that was genuinely interesting was Onerva's story. And I feel like that's really disappointing for the last season. Aria replies with this, I thought season 6 was the most well-written and tightest arc, story-wise. Just a very solid season. I think what I noticed about season 8 while I was interning was how generic it seemed, even just from the scripts. It instantly felt off to me, especially after the final drafts were completed. The characters either stopped growing or regressed, dynamics were pushed to the wayside, emotional arcs weren't wrapped up, and the overall tone of the season felt very early mid-2000s action show. I felt like I was reading an episode of Voltron Force. It was just hollow. I remember thinking at one point, and remember, this was before season 4 came out, you know, I could post a screenshot from day 47 script to the internet and no one in the fandom would ever guess it's from Voltron. Yeah, that would be correct. I would never have expected day 47. I personally liked it, but that was probably one of the few episodes that I did like, because I didn't hate the whole thing. It's just that, like Aria said, dynamics were pushed to the wayside, emotional arcs weren't wrapped up. It just wasn't the same. And like, yeah, it was pretty and everything, but what's, you know, window dressing means nothing to me unless there's substance to it. And Voltron used to have substance, and that's one of the key things I appreciate about cartoons, animation for children. Like, you know, Steven Universe every now and then has a filler episode. But incidentally, sometimes those filler episodes push towards growth in some way, even if it doesn't seem obvious to you. So it's a little bit nuanced, but I can appreciate it. And I'm going to put a wrap up on this show, but I know that so far some of you are already giving up on this movement. That's fine. I just want to make sure that you know that you need to move out of the way for those who want to keep going, like me. And I'm probably going to do this until, like, for several months to a year. Who knows? Maybe longer. I've done media campaigns before. It wouldn't be my first time, and I've done it for at least a year. Maybe I could do two. And also, I'm kind of a person that likes to hold grudges a little bit, so DreamWorks could be doing this, doing stuff for years to come, and I'd still be like, hey, why the F did you screw up season A? What's going on? You gotta tell me. I'll be hounding you. You can join us later if you want to do that. Take a break in the meantime, or you don't have to join us at all. You can just move on with your life. Go to another fandom that comforts you. Like I'm personally multitasking a little bit, so, you know, I do my show. I look at Voltron stuff because it's special to me. And also, Kingdom Hearts is going to be releasing on my birthday on January 29th, so I'm looking forward to that for all of the Let's Plays videos that people will have. And, you know, yeah, move on if you need to. I definitely am going to be moving on in different ways, but I'm still going to be part of this movement for a while until, you know, I've seen it through in some way, or until something breaks, because sometimes that happens. But I don't want it to break, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this movement is successful. And we'll see if that happens. But, you know, fandom for a lot of marginalized groups is supposed to be a refuge. So if it's not comfortable being here anymore, don't stick around, you know? Like, you know, this fandom in particular has put everyone through the ringer, whether it be from antis, people within your own friend circles, the enemies that you make, or the enemies that you somehow befriended. Crazy, I know. But definitely, like, you know, find your happy place, for sure. I mean that, and almost literally, and as well as I mean metaphorically. But I just need to remind you that you don't need to force yourself to be in a space where you're not comfortable. A reminder to not police people's behavior if it's not directly affecting you. And I also propose that from here on out in the culture of fandom, that you take screen caps and get your receipts, stick your stuff in a Wayback Machine, whatever. If you feel like you're going to be in danger in the future, backtrack, take screen caps quickly before you make your escape or whatever, or before you make your report to whatever authorities you see fit to help take care of your problems. And learn the tools that are at your disposal on social media, because, you know, whatever's in the public sphere is fair game. So that's why I keep receipts where I do, so that I can backtrack and, you know, source and cite my sources, right? So, you know, get savvy with that. And that's all I have for you. So thank you for listening. Tune in next time for either parts of my Lady Coddington Press Fairy book, queer analysis, or for more on reporting on Voltron Season 8. Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kpppfm.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kpppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kpppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.
Hello. It's Space Dad, Shiro, Josh Keaton. I wanted to say that sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to, but that's okay. All you have to do is remember to always stay positive. Because if you're always thinking about what could go wrong, or what did go wrong, or what you think went wrong, you might miss something else that's great. You might miss a chance to do something that's great. So go and be great.